Welcome to the Freedom's Gateway podcast, the program on how, in 1777, the Empire State built America and delivered on the promise of liberty. Our wonderful hosts, Bob Farley and Vinny Acero, will educate and entertain you. So, for the next few minutes, thank you for giving us a listen, hang on to your hats, and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome. My name is Bob Farley.
And my name is Vinny Acero.
We are your hosts for the Freedom's Gateway podcast. Last time we held our second introductory podcast where Vinny and I spoke about what will be covered in our podcast and what it seeks to deliver.
Episode 3, Part 1, Introduction.
Today, on this, our third podcast, we seek to share with you the underlying theme of our podcast by discussing the foundation of freedom and why it's so important. And as we indicated last time, these first set of podcast episodes seeks to introduce our listeners to the historical background that will form a foundation for our remaining program. In these first episodes, we seek to share with you, our listeners, why freedom, which was the driving force behind the revolution, is so important.
Yes, Vinny. Ours is a podcast that hopes to tell a fascinating and important story. First, a story of the American Revolution, with an emphasis on the military and political events that occurred in and around New York State. And second, the story of freedom. The freedom that not only drove the idea and events of the revolution, but the very concept of freedom that has become the most important philosophical principle in all of our lives as Americans.
In this episode, Bob, we will begin our journey by discussing the very nature of freedom and its foundations, where this concept came from and how it became what we know it to be today. And this journey will require us to examine a little bit of history, all the way back to the time of the Roman Empire.
Yes, Vinny, my friend, and as our excellent scholar of ancient history, and as a proud son of Italian heritage, why don't you kick us off?
Episode 3, Part 2, Freedom in Antiquity.
Sure, Bob. As we will discuss much more in depth in future episodes, our freedom is directly linked to both our rights and the law that protects them. Back over 2,000 years ago, the Roman Republic, upon which our founders used as a model for our present government, created a template for both. Rome was a nation of laws, and their law blazed a pathway for freedom. But that pathway was far from the freedom we all enjoy today. For the legal concept of right and the stable concept of law that protects it is a relatively recent one that was not fundamentally expressed until after the rise of English jurisprudence. Although they were trailblazers, Rome, despite their innovations, did not yet concretize what we would call today as freedom. Indeed, according to Susan Ford Wiltshire, the chair of the Classical Studies Department of Vanderbilt University, theories of rights assume a dignity of persons and a status of individuals that did not exist in the classical world. To this end, Dr. Wiltshire contends that prior to the predominance of English jurisprudence, the legal status of an individual was determined by their relationship with the state. So what contribution to our freedom did Rome actually make?
Well, Vinny, like any important concept, we need to start somewhere, and the Romans were indeed innovators. As a former Roman colony, the jurisprudence of England actually originated in Roman law. Since English jurisprudence led to our modern incarnations of the law, and the development of the legal concept of right, in order to fully comprehend these concepts and the origins of the freedom they produced, it is necessary to start by understanding its Roman origins. And from its origins, it is also indispensable to comprehend its development in the common law, the events of the Magna Carta, the rise of the new clerical legal philosophy, and the creation of modern constitutional law with the English Civil War and their glorious revolution. And lastly, the concretization of freedom through the American Revolution and its new experiment in representative government. Vinny, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Law of Rome?
Of course, Bob. The Law of Rome occupies a unique place in the history of our civilization. Indeed, it has been said that Roman law is the single greatest legacy which the ancient world has bequeathed to the modern. Over 2,000 years after its development, Roman law still today forms the basis for all the legal systems of Western Europe. Even in England and the countries which evolved from English law, such as the United States, the influence of Roman law is considerable and much greater than often admitted. Referred to as the most original product of the Roman mind, the invention of a comprehensive body of law was a development of Roman society. This body of law, which was both comprehensive and practical, would establish within its purview the foundational elements of what we know today as law and rights. Due to its universal character, comprehensiveness, practicality, and refinement, and because of Rome's military strength, power, and prestige, this body of law would prove both successful and enduring. It would further form the foundation for all future English jurisprudence. A fundamental basis shaping Roman law was the idea of continuity. Rome was the first civilization to openly recognize that the culture of Rome itself was greater and more eternal than any one king, ruler, or emperor. Roman law became an extension of this view. For Roman society understood that its civilization and culture would be extended and perpetuated through its law. Roman citizens were very well versed in the law. Indeed, in Roman society, knowledge of the law was viewed as the outstanding mark of a fine man. Romans respected the law, took it seriously, and believed in its value and purpose. They built a legal infrastructure with courts, lawyers, and procedures. They held an abiding interest in the creation and administration of the law, provided for its flexibility to address new challenges, and created a system that was both a comprehensive model and easy to copy. Like so many other Roman institutions, the law developed as a tool to order their civilization and its conquests. Inherent in these principles was the concept of justice. Indeed, the root of the word jus is a Latin legal term. The very underpinnings of what we know today as rights find their antecedents in Roman law. For although Roman society was without question stratified, where class status dominated legal principles, Rome was the first society to legally recognize the individual person, called persona, together with their claims and obligations, what we would call today their rights and duties. Although these rights and duties were directly linked to a person's relationship as a citizen of a Roman state, or with respect to their state-recognized relationship with a family, tribe, or clan, unlike our modern view, where such rights and duties are held by the individual, these Roman principles did offer a pathway to the development of modern laws and rights based in the individual. Rome was an empire based upon land, commerce, trade, and its military. Accordingly, its law helped promote law, rights, and civilization all across the then known world. Roman law did this by advancing conquest, instilling both consumer and merchant confidence, and by providing a consistent template for the governance and operation of conquered lands and peoples. The law of Rome, especially upon its codification, helped to make its empire the greatest of its time. Through its law, respect for the legal principles, and the concept of continuity, Rome became the center of civilization, power, wealth, and trade for the entire known world. Roman law was carried to all its colonies for a framework of administration. Roman law addressed those practical needs that its empire required to run efficiently, grow, and prosper. Under Roman law, these legally protected rights allowed the Roman economy to flourish, businesses to develop, and trade to dominate all other nations and peoples. The Roman concept of law acknowledged contractual agreements, invented corporations, established trade standards, and punished those who did not respect property rights. Like the great architecture for which it is known, Rome developed a system of law that was timeless and has provided a foundational element of all other legal systems throughout the ages.
Vinny, American law and its concept of rights, upon which our freedom is built, were derived from England and its laws. But England began as a part of the Roman Empire. Conquered by the Romans through a series of campaigns between 55 BC and 43 AD, the Roman Empire instilled in England their philosophy. And this philosophy endured, a philosophy of respect for the law, as well as many foundational Roman legal principles. Due to its vast distance and difficulties of administration, the Romans, however, allowed the English to develop a great deal of autonomy in their local law. That is why England developed its own system for making and enforcing their laws. But it used Roman legal principles despite the fact that it did not adopt all Roman law in its specifics. So although English law largely rejected many irrelevant parts of the Roman code itself, the Roman template and idea of the law being the basis for civilization and for justice, and of its need for respect, did become an unquestioned value of the English people. This is meant that from Roman times to the present, Englishmen could disagree over who should make the law or over what laws should be made, but they always held dear and greatly respected the concept of the law itself, as well as the fundamental procedures that were intended to produce justice.
Bob, when the Roman Empire fell and England was left to fend for itself, this tradition of respect for the law and the foundational basis that the law is a means to resolve disputes and deliver justice had already taken hold in Britain for hundreds of years. Due to its distance from Rome before the fall of the empire, as well as the passage of time after its fall, by the time of the Middle Ages, the settled law under which the English people lived had significantly diverged from the Roman code and transformed into what we call today the common law. And, as English jurisprudence began to develop, with both the events surrounding the Magna Carta and the establishment of the common law, these laws and rights began to see a slow transition from a state-defined Roman idea to an individual-defined identity driven primarily by a new belief in the concept of natural law.
Episode 3, Part 3, Freedom and the Common Law.
Vinny, in 1066, 6 centuries after the fall of Rome, William the Conqueror, a Norman knight, who due to his illegitimate birth status had questionable property inheritance rights in his native France, formed an army, invaded England, killed its King Harold, and took over the throne of the country. Coronated in Westminster Abbey on Christmas Day 1066, William proved an able ruler, effectively beginning to unite the country and placing it on the road to relative security and prosperity. William amplified the nation's respect for Roman law, as well as the concepts of feudalism, swearing oaths, and that one accused of a crime should be judged by a jury. That term came from the Latin word jure, meaning to swear an oath, because the members of a jury would swear an oath to only decide the case based on the evidence. Dedicated to these concepts, William began to transform both England and its people. And as England grew in law and prosperity, its system of jurisprudence began to follow suit, and a growing sense of individualism, founded in the reciprocal feudal duties and promises, began to develop. By 1154, a century later, England was ruled by a distant descendant of William I, King Henry II. A talented and intelligent king, Henry would become the first man to use the title King of England, and greatly expanded England's territory and scope of government.
Perhaps Henry's greatest accomplishment, however, is that he worked to promote a national and unified system of law throughout England. He did this by creating the King's Magistrate Courts, which became the very vehicle from which the common law began to emerge. In these uniform courts, local judges ruled on cases of disputes between parties, and then, following precedent of past decided cases, issued decisions to resolve the controversies. This practice began to give those who could ask the courts to resolve their disputes an expectation that they could gain a just and predictable result under the law based upon custom, justice, and what was the right thing to do. According to Dr. Wiltshire, this developing English common law was common in more than one sense, in that not only did it help to produce a common culture, but that it also was earthbound and daily instead of speculative and abstract, thereby paying greater respect to the individuals. It thereby led the English people and their law to begin to recognize the emergence of natural law, and with it develop a further concept of their own individual rights and freedoms.
Vinny, this common law developed in the courts of England would become a powerful vehicle for the advance of freedom. A vehicle transported to America and still in use by our courts today.
But Bob, the true linchpin of freedom and the foundational document of the British Constitution would come in 1215 with the issuing of the Magna Carta. This royal charter, signed and issued by King Henry's son, King John Lackland, and written in Latin, would contain 63 critical clauses that would outline the duties the British king owed to his subjects. Within its clauses were contained the concept of separation of powers, elected representative government, and free access to courts. By its terms, this document would recognize that the power of the state had its limits.
And then a half century later, Vinny, in 1265, St. Thomas Aquinas then issued his famous Summa Theologica, which advanced the concept of grace, which argued that all people have an individual relationship with God. The acceptance of this concept, advanced by St. Thomas, meant that all civil governments would soon also have to begin to elevate the status of the individual.
This was such an important watershed moment, Bob, and then building upon St. Thomas's work, other philosophers, clerics, and legal scholars, such as William Ockham, John Wycliffe, Thomas Hobbes, and John Locke, all began to argue that every human being should be vested with fundamental, individual, natural rights. This was the start of the recognition of natural law, which opened the Enlightenment and led to the English version of individual rights.
And these concepts of individual rights and natural law would be further refined by the English commitment to religion, the English Civil War, their glorious revolution, and then our own experience in the Americas. And so now, after this episode, we can all see how the antecedents of Roman and then English common law began to form our foundations of freedom. In all of this, we must remember that our concept of freedom may have ended, but it didn't start with us. Like has been said before, we stand on the shoulders of giants, and it was those giant men and women of colonial America, with their British heritage, who helped to refine these foundational principles and deliver on the promise of freedom that we all enjoy today.
Episode 3, Part 4, Final Thoughts.
And with that, our dear listeners, we hereby conclude our third episode on the first part of the Foundations of Freedom.
Dear listeners, before we sign off, please know that in the days and weeks ahead, as we travel our adventure together, that we welcome your comments, suggestions, and ideas. We can always be reached by email, and our email addresses are either Bob, Vinny, or Simi at 1777freedomsgateway.com. We all love hearing from you. Kindly note that 1777 Freedom's Gateway is all one word and contains no apostrophe, as the internet doesn't like them. Please also know that you can also learn more about our podcast and listen to our episodes on our website at 1777freedomsgateway.com. Once again, all one word with no apostrophe. Please come check us out.
In our next episode, episode 4, we will continue to discuss the foundations of freedom, focusing on the development of the English Tudor dynasty and the English commitment to religion. Both of those played a critical part in the foundations of our freedom. We're both excited, and we hope you are as well.
This has been a copywritten production of Robert T. Farley and Vincent Acero, all rights reserved.